You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 202 of East Central Native's favorite podcast. Jeremiah Morrill here, joined by my forever co-host, Dakota Davis.
Today's episode features the two of us, and we are joined by producer slash also forever co-host, Mr. Zach Burcham.
What a promotion.
And then also sitting to my left, the camera's right, the founder of the We Are Libertarians Network, the network that this show is on, Mr. Christopher Spangle.
Thank you. It's lovely being here. I see Danny's already in the comments.
Yep. We're going to be talking to Chris today about our yearly review, how we've been doing on the show, what he thinks about this show, whether or not he'd think we'd make it to 4 years long. We're also going to talk about some police and some violent interactions that have been happening with the police and kind of the media's reaction to that as well. And then also a local topic that we've been covering, statewide issue, though, is House Bill number 1381 dealing with renewable energy sources in the state of Indiana. We'll be giving you a update on that, so make sure you stick around until the end of the show.
The show is about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh, but hopefully you'll always learn something new. And if you join the Patreon, oh my God, will you learn something about all of us.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Patreon.com/BossHogOfLiberty. That is where you can go to support the show on a monthly level. The tiers start at $5 a month and they go all the way up to $80 a month. We give you all kinds of extra content if you sign up at Patreon.com/BossHogOfLiberty. There are different tiers. You get different rewards for each of the tiers. You get access at any tier to our secret Facebook group, which is only for Patreon members. You also get access to a special bonus episode at the start of each and every episode that we do. And you get access to the show notes before the show starts so you can follow along in real time and see what we are reading off of. And sometimes there's some links in there. Like today we have a link to an IndyStar article about House Bill 1381. It's really the only link that we needed for this conversation.
When you invite Dear Leader in, you know you can have something planned, but it's not going to work out that way.
No.
What the hell is the point?
Why bother? We're going to have a fun conversation.
The reason we bother is because we promise it to the people on Patreon.
That is true. It is exclusive content that they get. They find out at the same time as producer Zach does.
You can also go back in the secret feed and check out some of the old like Tenfold Time episodes.
That's right.
You can. Back in the day.
Those are still there.
Yeah, I saw them.
We never delete anything.
No.
We also live stream the video in the Facebook group, so it's just like this. You get basically, and this week we tried Vegemite. We talked about...
One of us loved it.
Yeah.
One of us has bad taste.
We're not going to...
Still just a little bit on my lips.
We're not going to say who it was that loved it. You'll have to join and find out.
There were a lot of complaints about my toaster.
Yeah, there were. And we also talked about hog testicles.
So. A lot of testicle talk.
Well, yeah, a lot of testicle
little
talk.
Little Danny talk.
Oh, my gosh. The drinking word for the night on Patreon was testicle.
Yeah.
You'd be
unconscious right now. Yeah? Yeah.
If you sign up at patreon.com/BossHogOfLiberty at more than $50 a month.
Damn.
Then you get a shout out at the front of each and every episode. Those folks our favorite Liberty lover up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That is Miss Christy Avery.
Aw, she's the best.
She's incredible.
Then we have our favorite car dealer in all of Indiana. Just going to say all of Indiana, the whole state.
In the nation.
Yeah. Andy Moore, Buick GMC and Fishers, Mr. Jonathan Phillips.
I got a real compliment on my GMC that I bought from Andy Moore today from Dear Leader.
Oh, I love whatever it's like.
It's a...
Black Jeep with the black wheels.
It's the GMC Terrain, black edition.
Yeah.
You haven't even seen the sunroof. That sunroof goes on for miles.
I love it.
I don't know where the sunroof goes. It just keeps, it's like damn near a convertible.
My car has a sunroof and it's like, it's not like the sunroof my parents had where it was like this much crack. It's like it's the whole top of the car.
It goes on forever.
Things are really getting better in this country, I'm telling you.
And then the biggest fan that we have of by monetary donation, Mr. Chris Lamb, huge fan of the show. We're a fan of his. Round of applause.
Brought us our shot glasses, our IMS shot glasses and barware.
And he's brought us cigars. Every time he's been on the show, he's brought us cigars.
Yes.
Which I just
do want to give a shout out to Hody Johns, who has apparently found his credit card number again, and he has rejoined the Patreon.
He deleted us.
The man that ruined Dave Smith's reputation.
Yeah,
that Hody
Johns of Utah is back, and Mark Rutherford is, I think, 2 or 3 weeks in now.
Nice,
back in the program. So we have some celebrity.
We also
Patreon
had,
members.
The We Are Libertarians Network. Evan McMahon, the state chair, Lucy Brenton, the vice chair, Mark Rutherford, they all joined the Indiana Libertarians. We're all getting along. It's great. Nice to see.
Doing great.
See how long that lasts.
Well, I plan to fist fight Evan later this week. But
Hopefully it's a fundraiser.
Yeah.
We also have T-Chip stores. That's where you can go to get your Boss Hog of Liberty merchandise. T-Chip.com/BHOL1234 or BHOL mug. Producer Zach is putting the links to all of those in the chat on the live stream right now. So you can just go ahead and click on the link and it'll take it to whatever piece of apparel you desire. BHOL4 is the masks, but we're probably going to be deleting that next week because Indiana is a free state now. And
but it's voluntary.
We're just not going to support it anymore.
I didn't wear a mask into the Pizza King.
Me either.
I wore mine. I'm not fully vaccinated like you posers over there who say, oh, I got my card. I've got 3 weeks for him. I'm in the clear, and I care about the people around me, so I wear
it. I literally, like, in Indianapolis, you pretty much wear your mask everywhere. Like, everybody still wants you to wear one.
Yeah,
but I walked
this
up.
This is like tourism, where you're like, I'm going to Florida. Screw those people. I'm not wearing my mask down here. It's the Wild West.
I've been to Florida.
You come to Henry County, like,
I literally
unwashed masses.
My car was like 14 steps away, and I had forgotten my mask, and I literally stopped and I went, this is Henry County. What do I need to wear? Like, nobody. I walk in. There's two boomers sitting in the lobby, no mask on. I'm like, I feel at home.
You should move here.
I told you there's one house left that's reasonably priced now. This is the last one. When it's gone.
Property values in Henry County are jumping to $70,000 a home. Here.
Listen, it's wild. Taxes have gone up 83% since the Chad Malicote administration began.
Well, listen, this year, there's a little box on my property taxes that says, assessed personal property value.
Right.
Personal property value. I don't know what that means, but last year it was $500 and this year it's $6,300.
What?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
You got something on your property there taxing you on.
Did you move the doughboy on your property?
Boy. I can neither confirm nor deny.
You could only wish.
The only thing I can think of is we had the exterior of the house. Like, we had new shutters and the gutters.
I mean, that's like 2007 stuff. Like, literally, like, my friend Ed, rest in peace, Ed Engleton, his
Jeopardy house, champion.
Jeopardy champion. His house in, you know, near Mass Ave went from like $400 a year to $10,000 a year in property taxes. And it's why Bart Peterson unbelievably lost in 2007. It's why, I mean, Mitch finished in kind of an unpopular position. Property taxes can't go up like that. People can't afford that stuff.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The only reason I got by is because of the stimmies.
Well, state and local employees were the hardest hit in COVID.
By the way, did Greg Pence get you your stimulus check yet?
Did you guys hear Mike Pence had a pacemaker put in today?
I did see that today, yeah. Yeah. You dodged my question.
Oh, yeah. So shout out to Greg Pence's office. Because they have, I wish I knew her name, but she is an incredibly smart staffer.
But you forget names, little people that help you.
Like Zach. No, so you post, I never got my stimulus. I didn't get two or three, okay?
Number two or number three.
Right.
Right.
And so.
So I tagged you. You were complaining.
And number one.
And
so
I tagged
I had
office.
A long, I wasn't complaining. It's called a gag. Look it up. Maybe the show be funnier. And so I had this long running bit where I called Trump a feckless B word. Get me my money. I'd tag him on Facebook right. and I'd be like, you're running your mouth for a guy who owes me $1,000 or, you know, or something like that, or less holding the Bible upside down, more getting me my money. And so in number two, I was doing that and it was Joe Biden. So of course I've got to like keep the joke going, right? About Joe Biden.
You're number three.
And you tag Greg Pence.
Oh, this is number two. Yeah, this is Pence's. I tagged Pence and his office.
Help me.
Yeah.
And this very smart staffer sees that I'm in the media and reaches out. Hey, let me help you. They go through the whole rigmarole. I fill out this paperwork.
I was trying to get you audited by the IRS.
And she helped. She got in touch with the IRS and they came back and they explained, like, because I had filed a paper return and I filed it by
How
the October.
How old are you?
It's a whole thing. I couldn't file electronically for some reason.
Throw the notes away. We're going to get into this. Explain to me what happened.
I literally don't know. I don't do my taxes. I have people that do that for me. Okay. Like I'm too
That's
dumb.
What rich people say.
You write to check at the grocery store too.
I'm literally too dumb to do my own taxes. And I can't write off 100% of what I spend my money on. So I have people that protect me legally because as a libertarian podcaster, I don't mess around. I pay all my tax. Like I literally had one boss who was sending me a 1099 and he's like, hey, I want you to know, like, I will turn this into the IRS. It's like, are you saying that you think I won't claim this income on my taxes? Because that's exactly what I'm saying because yeah. You're a libertarian. I'm like, I'm not messing around. Like, yeah.
I'm not playing with snakes.
No, exactly. Because my parents were small business owners. My dad had his entire business shut down for 3 months because of $75 worth of sales tax he didn't owe. So like they come after small business owners and you know, I'm sure I'll get audited at some point. And so I want to be, you know, do the right thing and be legal, I guess. And so I have to file a paper return. I never file on April 15th. Those bastards are getting my money October 15th. I file the extension. I want my money longer. And so I didn't file my tax returns. I forgot to sign it too. So I still have not filed my 2019 taxes. I have missed out on both of those. And it's Greg Pence's office that educated me about this. So I want to thank that staffer who did a lovely job, whatever her name may be. I don't want to put her on blast. Mostly I don't remember, but she was.
I don't want to put her on blast as I'm thanking her.
I wish I could.
Ends her career.
No, I mean, listen, there. Just because I'm a libertarian,
is a big deal.
Just because I'm a libertarian, it does not mean that I think that people who draw a government paycheck are evil people. A lot of people who work for the government go in with the best of intentions, be it the military, be it the bureaucracies, whatever. And then they get like 10 years into it and then they go, I'm joining the Libertarian Party.
I'm just turning to look at Zach over here.
I'm a government employee, a lifetime bureaucrat. Because if you look at the We Are Libertarians Facebook page, there's 100,000 people on it. The number one category of people are active military veterans. Number two is veterans. Number three is lawyers. Number four, like it's all, and the five is teachers. Like it's all people who deal with the government because they see the bureaucracy from the inside and how it doesn't work and how go talk to a teacher. Like they know exactly how they could do their job better, but No Child Left Behind, Washington, D.C. and departments of education across the countries. This country, like, make their job harder, make it worse for them. So,
I don't know.
I'm never mean to government employees because they're ripe for the picking to join the party.
I don't know if you remember this, but the last yearly review that we did,
yes,
we had a fairly new producer. His name was Christopher Guffey.
Rest in peace.
That person no longer exists.
I heard he died. Yes.
Yeah.
We have about 200 signs in the basement down the stairs that have, he's moved out of town and he's changed his name. We need to have a Guffey burning party.
Typical politician. Got you to spend your money on him and then vanished in the night like a thief.
Just trash.
We have a new producer now. His name is Zach Burcham.
Yes.
And you were really harsh on Mr. Guffey.
Yeah. Well, listen, in radio, you start at the bottom and you're treated like, you're at the bottom because you and I had this conversation recently.
We did. Yeah, we did. This week.
When you are starting at the, you were starting out in your career and you were a man, you're an idiot. You're 21. Always. You're dumb. You don't know what you're doing. I was the worst intern imaginable for Abdul. And in radio, there's a little bit of hazing because in male-oriented environments, generally there's a lot of teasing.
You expect people to fail. You have to prove yourself.
Right. I'm sure it's the same in sales. Like, this is a tough business you're in. Radio is a tough business, believe it or not.
Oh my God, we're in radio, Zach. Yeah.
I'm talking about my business. We're dealing with a lot of egos. You're dealing with a lot, not the people I work with, they're all great. But in general, radio is a lot of difficult people. And so you always, as an intern, I was hazed. I was sent down during the smoking ban debate in 2005 to count 50 paces away from the front door of the Emmis building, our competition. And Abdul and Andrew knew that was the middle of the street at rush hour in the morning. I didn't know that because I'm an idiot intern and I'm literally in the middle of the road. I'm going to get hit by cars. It was hilarious. It was great comedy. But you get hazed a little bit, right? And if you're going to be in an environment like this, if you're going to be in a friend group, you've got to stand up to a little ribbing. You got to be a little tough on people. Then people got to learn a little lessons every now and then, or else you're going to, you know, in his case, get killed. Or in my case, you know, you might post a meme that is not appropriate. Very, very comparable very situations. Similar, yeah. Right. So I have grown to respect Chris
Staton.
As a man.
The little people. Chris, what was his name again?
As a former broadcaster. He's a family man now. I'm proud of the growth that he has made.
He has a special needs dog. He's done very well for himself.
It's Mason I have a problem with. Mason needs to grow up and get his stuff together.
Well, nobody's even seen from Mason in years around here at this point.
Mason was your little buddy. Like, it was like literally like he was your
bring him around. Yeah,
vacation your emotional with him. Support.
All of that stuff. He was our intern.
Right.
Chris is our producer and intern Mason.
They'd go camping and Mason would sleep in the bed.
He would pull my boat for me. It was great. I go somewhere. I pull the camper. He'd take the boat.
No, Mason's a nice boy. I'm just teasing. And I don't think I've been mean to Zach.
Not yet.
Zach and I met.
That's what the conversation was about.
But Zach's a man. Zach's a man and he and I have met.
How old does Zach look to you?
39 and a half.
38. He's pretty close.
Yeah. I thought you were going to get right on the head.
I was over exaggerating.
He's exactly 1 year off. I'm 38 and
I was going to say 37 as a real guess, but 39 and a half for comedy.
Well,
Guffey says I'm 45.
Yeah. He plays him. Now, the running joke on this show is that none of our audience knew how old Mark Brim was until it came out on the air and everybody was floored. I got more emails about Mark Brim's actor.
I was shocked. I thought it was a joke in the 57, moment.
57, right?
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks.
Mark Brim and I are the same age. and it's not even the look. I applaud him for being that jaded at that age.
No, see, Mark is...
Audrey once told me, she said, you're about 5 years away from becoming Mark Brim.
I haven't had an in-person conversation with Mark in years. It was when I was executive director of the Libertarian Party.
It's probably been like 2011, 2012.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
And he looked fairly young to me. So I haven't
seen him lately. He's not aged well, but it's great.
That's sad to hear. Yeah. Well, meth is tough.
We bring Mark in, we set him down, and he just complains. And it's the greatest radio we can ever imagine.
My favorite.
I'm kidding, by the way. Mark is not on meth.
Yeah. He's a university employee. He's a great guy.
Someone heard that. They're like, oh my God.
Oh, that explains a lot.
One of my favorite things that Mark Brim ever said on this show was we were talking about how he had lost a bunch of weight.
Yeah.
And I was like, what'd you do? Just start eating right or whatever? And he said, walks and cigarettes.
That's like Chris Bowers. Did you ever hear of Chris Bowers, who used to own the Morty's Comedy Club?
Chris has been a guest on the show.
Great comedian. You know how he lost like 100 pounds? He'd buy one of those giant bags of popcorn, and that would be his meal for the day. And then the next day, he would eat a mixture of Swedish meatballs and cocktail weenies. And he'd eat one meal a day at 4 o'clock every day, and that was his diet for 6 months. And I think he gained the weight back, but he looked great.
Of course he did. He crash dieted. Right. That's how it works.
Mark Brim posted a picture of himself when he was younger, his Kicks 96 April Fool's thing. And he looks just like a friend of mine who is the same age, and they don't look anything alike now. So at one point, these two looked the same as an adult. And now they're unreckoned. They don't look anything alike.
It's the walks and cigarettes. Mark looks great.
You're young. You're like mid-20s, right?
Yeah.
Dakota. So like all your Facebook friends are young and hot still. But like, did you go to public school?
Yes.
I'm not even going to ask Mr. Homeschool over here. Like at
dropped
our,
out after the sixth grade.
At our age, like there are sometimes I'm scrolling through Facebook and I'm like, they look amazing. And then there are sometimes where I'm like, who's that old person? Oh my God. That's
there
like
is, there
my
is
locker
a change. There is a change that's happening. And some people have been on a rocket ship and other people are like, God, you're doing fine.
There's some people that like look in my brain look the same. They haven't really changed. Like any changes in their appearance since high school has been like subtle enough that I'm like, oh, they look the same that they looked in high school.
My dad is like that to me. I look at my dad and he still looks like the exact same.
Yeah. I got really bummed like 2 years ago at my brother's wedding. And I like was sitting across from my
wedding.
I was sitting across from my parents. Shut up. And I was like,
you'll get another crack at the apple, buddy.
My parents are getting old because in my brain, they still looked exactly like they did when they were 35. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm totally with you, but it's harder when your parents are.
We're into knee 60s. Surgeries and all kinds of fun stuff. Now with my parents.
Let's talk about the police.
We're not done with our review. Is that all he wanted to say about us?
Let's just stick on fun stuff. Who wants? I mean, we can talk about that stuff, but
okay. Well, we'll skip part of it because I do want to just talk about fun stuff. This is bit. I don't want to get too heavy.
Did you think we were going to make it 4 years?
Yeah.
Here's what I will say.
Gathered around my sunroom back table, trying to do episode one.
At that point, no, because that was not only was it not good. I don't know who else was on that. It was you,
Audrey Dakota, me, and I think that was it.
Okay,
maybe Sarah. I think it was just.
I think Sarah was there, and it just didn't sound good.
Once we got rid of you,
I was the thing holding that together. Trust me. Like you know, let's be honest. You've called some horse shows at that point, but I'd done some podcasting in my life, and like I was like, all right. When somebody pitches me a show on the network, because we're the longest running libertarian podcast now that some people are in jail. and so
John McAfee,
no others. But
there's a list.
There's a whole list of former libertarian podcasters in jail. I don't know if we're the longest, but like we're one of the like when I started in 2012,
prove him wrong.
Yeah. Like in 2012, it was literally like, I kept a list of the other 50, you know, and there were like five that were like Tom Woods hadn't even started doing it yet. And so it's now blossomed to a point that I can't keep track of all the libertarian podcasts, let alone all the podcasts. There's 2 million podcasts now. Last year it was 1 million. I mean, it's exploding.
It's 1.9 million as of like March 1st.
Yeah. Now there's like 60% of those are not active. So back when you started doing it, people would come to me all the time and like pitch a podcast because they wanted to be on a podcast network and they wanted to be, you know, and I've generally turned people down because I give shows to my friends. I'm very nepotistic with this, right? Like I liked Brian Nichols. I thought he would be a really good host. He's turning his thing into a really strong brand. Rimzo Martinez has worked for all these great companies, just an all-star. Like Trisha Stewart, man, is one of the funniest people. Like, but back in the day when you started,
I posted some high quality original content on her wall today and I didn't even get a
reaction. Well, she was a new mother. Maybe she was busy. But like when you started, it was like, oh, Maya wants to do a show. Cool. Okay. You know, so I didn't know how seriously.
How'd that go?
Yeah, right.
I'm still here.
I got a call for longtime fans. Maybe none of your fans will remember. I got a call about January 8th. Hey, you might want to take my name off of things. Bye. I was like, okay. So I wasn't totally sure that you would make it because, like, if you put your mind to something, you're very organized and diligent about it. And, like, I knew you would keep doing it. I didn't know Dakota would keep doing it because you and Dakota hadn't been friends for very long and he seemed like a solid guy. If you had asked me, would you still be doing this 4 years from now? Yes. Would Dakota still be doing it? No, because
here's the thing.
Most people get married and have kids like he has and they like move on with their lives and do other stuff. Like all the different co-hosts.
How many
co-hosts
have you been through?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm literally on my seventh iteration of We're Libertarians. I mean, not a joke.
Whenever I get a new hobby, I get obsessed.
Yeah.
I get obsessed to making it the best that it can be. So that's like whenever we started and it was like 2 months in, I was like, all right, this is for real now. We're going to figure out how to make this sound better.
Yeah.
So I just read a lot. I started looking at what type of microphones we needed. And then I was like, we went and did your show. And I'm like, we need an actual studio space.
Yeah.
And I figured all that stuff out.
And the patrons. Honestly, the patrons are one of the most motivating factors.
And then it was like, okay, we need all this stuff. I'd read all these things, what we need, talk to you a bunch. And then it's like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
How are we going to do this? And then we set up a GoFundMe first.
Mm-hmm. Eventually it evens out.
And then
out,
we did the Patreon. And the first day that we did the Patreon, we got over $200.
Goals. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing is the Patreon is such a huge boost. Like there are certain, it's like I talked to this guy who if you remember iQuest and then Lightbound, Jack Carr founded it. And I got to know him a little bit and we talked a lot about podcasting and stuff. And he's like, you know, when you're building a business, like you're putting down one brick, you're working on that brick and then you put down the next brick. And then like you look back and you see the wall and you go, oh wow, there's this piece that made this thing and this piece that made that thing. And starting the podcast is one thing, but then like putting together the website and then Patreon was the biggest bump. Because all of a sudden, you have all these people who are fans of your work.
You have a network of people that are invested.
Investing and they are care. Fans and love it. Yeah.
You have such a loyal... I don't know if I can... I tried to describe this, but I don't know if I can properly articulate it. But for over 200 episodes, I've tried to show the appreciation to the people that make this possible.
Yeah.
Because it is... This is... I call this my golf game. I don't really go play golf.
Yeah.
This is my hobby, and it gets paid for.
Yeah.
Right? I get to show up. I have incredible conversations, great friendships, and it gives us an avenue to explore topics and to learn together and to also uniquely create a local news source that doesn't exist in this community otherwise.
Yeah, and what's cool about Patreon is like, if you get something of value, you're giving something of value back to make this better. Like right. From where you started in that little board that you sold without my permission, that was mine, to now having your own.
It's multiplied.
You have your own studio, your own lights. Like I just sent him a note for like, here, you should get these lights to make this better. And this way it's going to cost $400. Like for my Patreon, like I just had to buy $500 of equipment for a new podcast. And I didn't have to sweat that. Like right. 5 years ago, I would have had to go beg, you know, Jason Doolittle, Christy Avery, like, right. You know, and it just makes it so much better because now the quality of the next thing I'm going to do, which is called the History of Modern Politics, you can go to historyofmodernpolitics.com, like right out of the gate, it's going to be high quality because I'm investing in that next thing. So,
and it's great. The audience with the Wall Network and the BHOL show, the audience connected in a way that I don't know that we ever expected. Any of us did where yeah. It was, you know, it's this little niche thing and it took off to the point where it does pay for itself. And yes, it takes effort,
yeah,
but it's self-propelling.
No, I mean, I don't know what you guys put into it, but I put 10 to 20 hours a week into my show and I have from the beginning and I don't make like, I make a couple hundred, $200-$300 off a month a profit, but like, I do it because I love it. I enjoy doing it. There are times that I have wanted to quit and just not do it. I mean, that's natural after 9 years of doing the same thing. And there's some times when you need to pivot. But the patrons make you want to keep doing it. The notes of I love what you do keep you going. If I quit doing this, I know people will be disappointed. And I know I would be disappointed because I'd lose that outlet.
You right? might need a week off here and there, but but you love the show, right?
Yeah, it's exactly
total dedication.
Right. And what I love about Boss Hogg is that you guys, as my show has evolved into something different and a little more egg-heady and like a different type of show and away from like the glory years of 2015 to 2017 that were so glorious we had to put them behind a paywall for all of our collective futures.
No freaking joke.
Yeah, like
I wondered about that. Like yeah. Sometimes it'll pop up in my Facebook memories.
I'm like, no, all that stuff. Everything from 2018 is free, but everything from 2012 to 2018 is behind a paywall. And like, listen, those were fun times, and there was a ton of camaraderie. But there were just several different breakdowns between you know Vibbert leaving and Greg leaving, and other people and their relationships breaking down. It was just like, you know, I had to evolve it into something different. But Boss Hogg has kind of kept that like fun, like you're getting events and you're getting news, but you're also just getting kind of like a fun, light listen.
It's collegiate.
As opposed to, it's like
Why the hell are you here, Zach? Why do you enjoy this? We were literally next door to you.
Yeah.
And you would watch the show. And
I
then,
think that's the only reason he likes it.
And then here you are.
Because he likes podcasts trapped. And there was one next to his house.
And he's so,
it was pretty interesting. That was fascinating.
And he's so desperate to get out of his house on Thursday nights. He said, yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah. And well, it got me involved in like local. I mean, in local politics, I said this like last weekend, 200 probably, is it's fascinating because you get to know people. One thing that's unique to Newcastle, like some people like to knock Newcastle when we talked about small town life, is that like I go to city council meetings regularly. I know half the city council, as in I knew them as people, with not them being on city council. Like I graduated with the mayor's son. Like I can go through and tell you all those people. I see him around town. I saw Corey Murphy.
Which one of the city councilors did the most drugs? Biggest slut.
Any of them did.
Aaron Dickin.
Aaron Dickin. Dickin could take. I saw Dickin today. I was like, I want to thank Corey Murphy and Aaron Dickin for not hitting me while I was running this week when I saw them, because that's always a treat.
I don't know. Mayor York was a flower child.
Probably, so.
Yeah. I think that what you guys have here is community. And that's what's great about the We Are Libertarians podcast network. Like all the different hosts, we fight. I don't fight with libertarian podcasters. Like I don't get into all that. Like these guys can, you know, over in this caucus could do that thing and this, like I'm out of that game. Right. But like I will fight with Brian Nichols and Dennis Reinhold all day long. Right. You know, like I fight with you. Like and it's because we have a family. Like we're having a pool party July 15th.
17th.
At your house.
I thought it was a secret. It's July 47th.
Yes.
That's just for patrons. You need to join or be a co-host or something. Don't just go showing up at my house. You need to make sure Spangle invites you.
Yeah, because everybody's flying in for it. You know,
this is a big deal.
Because we have like Brian Nichols.
This is like the wall convention.
Like Brian is, like.
By the way, I've been begging Corey Murphy to find a way to get me my tax abatement because my pool brings people into this community and it's an economic driver.
I'm not even going anymore. Dale Melchin can't go, so
Dale's coming from Iowa. Hody from Utah.
He says he's not coming anymore.
He's coming. I'm making him.
I need some stimulus for my pool to host.
That's
this
what
thing.
I'm saying.
I'm going to fill the Steve Alford All American Inn with this party.
But it's like, you know, where we talk every day. We're like a family with each other. They're my best friends, you know, and I'm their best friend.
Just the one.
I am your best friend. I mean, when you look at me, you obviously know he's my best friend. No, but it's such a fun group of people, and like your show more than any of the others, like kind of keeps that early days of Wall where it was goofy and fun, but also informative alive.
I think one of the keys that makes it goofy and fun is that we are still, we may be the only truly in-person show that's left.
Yes.
We're people that get together in person, pandemic or not. And we actually still get together and
we
talk.
We did some Zoom shows.
We did about 2 months of Zoom when there was a newborn baby involved for the Davis family. But we got back into the studio as quick as we could. But I think that's one of the keys of the of the interaction we have. We could have guests from all over the country and people would Zoom in. I've shown some people that have offered to Zoom in before and I'm like, they'd be awesome. But
Harry refused to do it anymore. And
we make people come all the way out to Newcastle.
And Reinhold lived like an hour away. And I was just like, you know, at that point I'd started dating Reagan. And so it's just like, so we went all Zoom and like long before the pandemic. But you're right in that it's, you know, in my tiny apartment, it was just getting too oppressive. So I agree with you. I think that an in-person podcast has something, especially when you see each other every week. You know, like when Greg and Aaron and you and everybody would show up with a beer and Gina would show up and then, you know, the anagnosis was like you'd have different people coming in all the time and it was like your fun hangout with your friends. But there is also a part where it's like it gets tough as you get older and you have spouses and kids and
having a beautiful, luxurious downtown studio.
That's what makes this workable.
Not in your kitchen.
That's what makes this workable. Is you guys have your own headquarters. Yeah.
Since it was at my house, it was getting exhausting.
Yeah.
Having people in my house every week.
Yeah.
The senator is in his living room waiting.
I am trying to talk Remzo and Brian and Trisha and all of them to moving to Indianapolis. We get a studio downtown. You know, well, you're 45 minutes from a Chick-fil-A. We can't do it here.
We have Wheeze.
I mean, when you get it, no.
The Chick-fil-A Facebook page for Newcastle has already been created.
All right. When you get one, I'll consider it because I would love to move to a town where I can get 375,000 square feet for only $150,000 a year.
That's not true for anymore. House,
yeah. Yeah, that was like 2019.
It's gotten crazy.
No, I mean, my mom just sold her house in an hour, 10 above list price. Yeah. I have another friend who they sold their house in 7 hours.
Yeah, the age of the cheap Newcastle real estate is in the rearview mirror.
I want to talk about Pat Robinson really quick.
Yeah.
This just needs to get, we need to talk about it.
I'm sorry. Time out. What was the name?
Pat Robertson.
Okay.
What did I say?
Robinson.
Oh.
Where have you gone, Mrs. Robinson? I was just Joe DiMaggio and whatever. Anyway.
Oh, can you please, Mrs. Robinson, Jesus loves you more than you will know.
We're going to get demonetized.
Oh, that happened to us one time on YouTube. We got a strike against our channel because I sang a song.
Dude, that's the hardest part is it's like nearly impossible to do this stuff because they're just so crazy.
What
We are on YouTube. It automatically goes out there. There's no video. It's just the audio.
Chris Finger takes care of that for us.
And there's about, it happens automatically. No, Chris, I'm sure Chris is up in his underwear on a Friday morning at 3 o'clock. Manually copying audio.
No, that is all.
It's all automated.
Automated thanks to our patrons.
It's magical. It's magical and it happens and it works great.
Yes. So if you need to listen on YouTube, you can.
But you can do it. Yes. And if you're YouTube premium, you can mute it.
We get like 5 views on those.
Really?
There's like 5 people.
And then we'll get some spam comment that's just some nasty, horrible thing and I'll have to log in and delete some comment out.
You can automatically port with that tool your Facebook videos to YouTube.
That's very complicated. We'll get
more viewers on YouTube.
We would need to talk about that.
Put it on your Roku.
We used to. I used to actually do that. I used to download every.
Yeah.
I used to download all the videos from
this
Facebook.
This is definitely a conversation that should be in the main
and
show.
And then upload them.
So Pat Robertson.
It was awful.
He flashed weaponry on the 700 Club today, Spangle.
If you haven't seen the photo.
It is a great photo.
I'm on Twitter and I'm like, why is Pat Robertson trending? He must have died. And then I wish we could show you, but the video is just hilarious of like him waving around weapons.
he's got a taser and he's got a gun.
Right.
And Pat Robertson is so old, it's like a Beretta that he's waving around. The police haven't used that since the Cold War.
Yeah, you got to go look at that. He's just like, he's 97 at least, not a day over 95. With like a horrible pancake makeup with his old fingers. This is old man hooks.
He's taken he looks like he's robbing.
He's in like, it looks like he's in like a Mr. Rogers cardigan. And it's just
looks like he's trying to.
I
am pro police, folks. I think we need the police. We need
that's Ron Paul.
Service, and they do a good job.
But are they in the same
if
person?
They don't stop this onslaught, they cannot do this. You know, the police in Virginia picked up a lieutenant in the army and began to give him trouble. And our state police are highly trained.
What at what point in life do you think you get that voice?
97.
What
I mean,
are you, when you start making that,
when you've lost Pat Robertson,
things are going badly.
Things are going badly for you. I mean. We're getting to a watershed moment where police have a tough job.
They have a damn near impossible
very difficult job.
And you can't, they're making judgment calls constantly and it's a 99.99% do everything great. And then something doesn't go well.
I think here's the thing it's like I said earlier about government officials. When you have lawmakers and really a society that pushes those lawmakers to pass a law that criminalizes everything and regulates everything, look at this table. Is there anything on this table that the government's regulations do not touch?
And I'm not sure they entirely understand Vegemite.
Yes. Well, that should be regulated. I mean, listen, I'm a free market guy, but get this shit out of here. Oh, excuse me. So
it's after 8 o'clock. You can say it.
Okay, good. We're safe harbor hours. Police are the ones who enforce those regulations. Police are the ones who enforce those laws. The federal,
and
the state.
Eventually, any idea that politicians put in place ends with a guy with a gun.
Exactly.
Rubber meets the road. They have to deal with it.
If there are not police officers, a politician is a person with a bad idea, a bad opinion, right? They have everything is about the ability to force others to obey a law. And so when you have police officers that have the ability to pull someone over on a traffic stop because of an air freshener, you have now created an escalation. All right. So you've now put the citizen and the police officers in a position where they're in a life or death struggle over an air freshener and a warrant. This guy had a warrant for two misdemeanors that were equally as obnoxious. We have completely over-criminalized everything in society. I forget exactly what they were, but they were like traffic-related, I believe.
Oh,
they were not violent acts by any stretch of the imagination.
One of my favorite quotes from Rex Bell is, "We need to learn the difference between crime, a bad habit, and a nuisance."
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and a crime is when you violate someone else's rights. Like if I am sitting here berating Dakota, that is a nuisance. That is morally wrong. But once I put my hands on him and I breach that moment of contact, then I have committed a crime against him.
And even then, you know, I think that I think Portland, Oregon is one of the, or I think Oregon in general is one of the last remaining states that still has mutual combat laws. That should straight up be legal.
Yeah.
If I see you outside of a bar and I'm like, "You want to fight?" And you're like, "Yeah, I want to fight."
Yeah.
We should be able to fight.
You do you. That, listen, if Antifa and the Proud Boys want to go at each other, put them in a field and let's take care of this naturally.
Let's put it on pay-per-view.
You're right.
Yeah. Content. Yeah. Immediately, Spangled. The mind always goes to content.
I've been reading a lot about
it. How can we monetize it?
I've been reading a lot about ancient and medieval history. And let me just say, when Rome had a problem with their politicians, they ended up exiled or somewhere else. And I don't mean alive.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about is that every time that there's a situation with the police in this country, we get a lot of hashtag defund the police. And it's actually pretty common in libertarian circles to see defund the police out there. I'm curious as to what this group thinks, because I know that all three of us were as active in the Libertarian Party. All of us were pragmatic.
Yeah.
I'm not active anymore. I think that I have an opposite opinion as to what most libertarians do on this issue, because I'm totally opposite of defund the police. I actually think that we should fund the police more. I think that we need to start funding a lot more training for the police and how to de-escalate and handle situations. And a lot of people say defund the police as in we need to take funds away from the police department. We need to hire something akin to a social worker to come and handle like domestic situations and things like that. I'm saying we should train the police to just do that job, that part of their job, better than what they are doing now.
Yeah, I mean, there is, I think it's like 200 to 500 hours for firearm training for a police officer and 8 hours of de-escalation training, you know, and training really does matter. And the way that we train police puts them in a no-win situation. It puts citizens in no-win situations. And let's just address the elephant in the room. Populations that are wildly over-policed. Black citizens are over-policed and are consistently harassed by police. And it's...
So many of the interactions are because of the war on drugs.
That's exactly right.
That's the driving factor.
And the war on drugs
is digging at the outer edges.
Yeah.
I read this book.
The war on drugs was all about cracking down on black people and hippies. I mean, that's why the Nixon administration
started. Did you read the book, Charles Manson, the CIA, Charles Manson, and the Secret History of the 1960s?
No.
So that's a really good book. And it touches a lot on this issue about we hear a lot of these, terms like systemic racism, institutional racism, things like that get thrown around on social media, Twitter, and by politicians all the time whenever these issues get brought up. That book really does a good job of kind of digging back into that time period when a lot of this was starting, post Jim Crow era laws in the United States. And it really talks about why policing started so much in the inner cities, why black people went to the inner cities to begin with, and then also about the CIA's role, the government's role in the drug problem in the inner cities.
Yeah.
Like talking about the real, do you know who the real Rick Ross is?
Mm-mm.
Isn't that when you click on a thing, a music video, and then it turns into the
other? So that's a Rick Ross. Well, we know like, yeah, we know like Rick Ross, the rapper.
Right.
But the real actual Rick Ross was a cocaine dealer, a crack cocaine dealer. I forget what city he was in, but he got in the middle of this thing all of a sudden between the local police department and then higher level government authorities. He was in the middle of dealing crack cocaine for the CIA,
yeah,
and he had no idea.
No, I mean,
getting arrested, kept getting released. He had no idea why he was being released, but the police department wasn't allowed to hold him because the CIA was using him to funnel crack cocaine into the United States, and he just thought that he was a real legit gangster and couldn't be touched.
Was it Blow where they're running cocaine for the CIA? I think. Forget what the movie was. That happened a lot. I mean, and if you go back and look at Nixon's chief of staff's comments in Harper's monthly in the early 90s, Ehrlichman said that the entire reason that they started the war on drugs was because they had a problem with the radical left and the Black Panthers. And they literally, like, this is almost a direct quote. We couldn't criminalize being black and we couldn't criminalize being a leftist. So we started cracking down on drugs in those specific areas of town. And so
that's why marijuana got its name.
Why?
That marijuana was never called marijuana.
Uh-huh.
It was tied back to, Mexican immigrants.
Mm, okay.
And they said Mexican immigrants are bringing in this crazy drug. It's
right.
Called marijuana.
Right.
And it was William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah.
Came up with the name on his own, popularized the name. And that's why marijuana is illegal.
Yeah. I mean, so there's a ton to the war on drugs that when you get to defund the police, when you get to Black Lives Matter, when you get to what happened over the last summer and the Chauvin trial, many of us who live in this area and in white communities don't have the same level of enforcement in our lives. We don't have the same considerations. Like my co-host is black, and it really sunk in for me when he's like, I never feel safe leaving the house because I don't know if I get stopped if I'm coming home. Harry is not like, Harry's the most responsible human being. Like, you know,
it's like, weird for Harry to say something like that too. Because
yes, he's not. Yeah, the attitude is that, oh, well, they are down there doing bad things, and if they would just stop breaking the law, it's like this Army veteran was driving with an air freshener. Like, at what point are you going to get that this isn't just about,
they said,
just follow the law?
And to give a little bit of a backstory, if no one knows, the Army lieutenant was actually, he was driving in his vehicle. It was a new vehicle. I think that this is right. It was a new vehicle. He didn't have the plates on it yet.
Yeah.
He had a paper plate that was taped to... He had two paper plates, actually. One was taped to the side window. One was taped to the back window. And the police officer... It was dark outside, so he couldn't quite see it. So he decided to pull him over, which is fine. I've been pulled over in that same situation. And I understood it. The back window was tinted super dark on my truck whenever they pulled me over. They had no idea that I had a license plate. And... It definitely could be the same situation. The driver of the vehicle, the Army lieutenant, is like, he's thinking about his safety now.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm going to drive to a well-lit area. So he slows down below the speed limit, puts his blinkers on, and then drives to a gas station that is approximately a mile and a half away. The closest gas station, he pulls into a well-lit area. And then that's whenever it escalates because... Yeah.
Because he didn't think he pulled over fast enough.
He didn't comply hard enough.
Yeah, because the police automatically saw he wasn't pulling over immediately. And just the dude immediately calls for backup. He seemed to be a new police officer.
Yeah.
Because did you watch the video?
I didn't.
In the video, the actual video that came out first is the second officer to arrive on the scene.
It was a body cam, right?
It was a body camera.
Yeah, I've seen like clips of it, but I haven't watched
the whole thing. Yeah, he was actually the second officer that arrives on the scene, immediately gets aggressive, immediately starts yelling at him, get out of the car. Automatically, both officers have their guns drawn, and the dude has both of his hands stuck out the window, and he's like, what did I do wrong? Asking him what he did wrong. And the second officer kept telling the stopping officer, the one that started to make the started the whole interaction, pulling him over. He kept telling him to get out of the way, like back up for a second, back up for a second, like telling him to leave. And you could tell that the first guy was super uncomfortable with everything that was going on. The first officer just kept giving him a look that was like, you've taken it too far, but seemed anxious to say anything to him.
Yeah.
And then just starts pepper spraying the dude in his face. And he says, he's like, the way you're acting right now, I'm legitimately scared to get out of my car. And he says, you should be.
Yeah, I heard about it. And the thing about him driving to, I can remember things back in elementary school, we had police officers come, they did like the DARE program and stuff. And that's something that you get told is 100% okay to do. If you're being pulled over and you're in a dark area and you're uncomfortable with where you are, slow down, turn your blinkers on. That way they know you're aware that they're there and drive slowly to a well-lit place, because there are fake cops that will pull you over in the middle of a dark area and you turn the lights on, just counting you. But like, I saw the video. I was like, he even pulled over in such a way that like looked like he was near a gas station. Like he pulled over to the edge of the gas station, so all the lights were on his side of the car. And I was like, so he did everything that I had been told is okay to do.
So he was white.
He was like, and here's the thing.
He's like, man, he kept telling the officer, he's like, man, my seatbelt's on. I don't want to put my hand in the car and put my seatbelt on and get my seatbelt off right now. And he's like, he's just kept telling him, put your hands out of the car and get out of the car.
Right. With your seatbelt on.
But he can't get out of the car.
Right. He's like, my seatbelt is on. Take your seatbelt off. He's like, I'm not putting my hands where you can't see them.
I think a lot of people who read a lot about critical race theory ought to just talk to one of their black friends about how they feel in those situations and try to understand that perspective, because I think that video is very indicative of not only like the thought that goes into getting pulled over, the care with which the person acts when they're pulled over, and then the way they're still treated by the police officer.
And this officer did get fired.
Yeah. And then the case where the police officer somehow, which is what Robertson was talking about, mistook her gun for a taser, which is almost impossible. But, you know,
and it is different.
Was it yellow?
They're making tasers black now, like guns, which is insane. But the conversation around policing, it's not a matter of, and police officers feel unfairly targeted. And I don't think that that's totally fair. I think that the thin blue line has to crumble. It's starting to crumble with the Chauvin trial. You're seeing the police come up and just sandbag and bury this guy for improper procedure for murder. And that never would have happened in some of these other cases, like the woman in Texas who mistakenly said, oh, I went to the wrong apartment.
The wrong floor apartment.
Right. Like that stuff, the rallying around the bad apple, of which Chauvin, from his background, seemed to be, you get this in all of the public sector employment, like in teachers. When you talk about teachers unions, don't hear, I don't like the way as a citizen and taxpayer, my arrangement is set up with the teachers union. Teachers hear, you hate teachers. And that's largely because of propaganda from the teachers unions. It's the same with police. And so instead of having like a conversation about how the police are interacting at a large scale with the citizens, they're closing ranks, they're closing circles. That's the wrong reaction, you know, and the root of the cause is all those laws that get passed. But there has to be a change in policing. Is it defund the police? Listen, in a completely anarchist society, there's still going to be police. If you have no government, in a completely libertarian society, it doesn't mean that there are no laws. It doesn't mean that there are no police. You will still have laws. You will still have police and law enforcement of different types. You will just be able to voluntarily contract with those people and consent to the laws by which you're governed. It's not anarchy, right? And when you try to say to police, you're governing us in an incorrect way, the answer from grandstanding politicians and from police is it's immature. It's a middle finger to your face. And it's like people are just not going to stand for it anymore. Like, sometimes you got to change.
Sometimes the system does work correctly, though. I'm a little hazy on the details, yeah, but I know we had an issue in Henry County last summer.
Yeah, there was an arrest last summer with a local officer, and he had the guy cuffed. He had the guy sitting on the curb. And then my understanding is, and it's rough, so I wasn't there. I remember hearing about this. He just started hitting the guy for like no reason. And he was cooperating. The guy was sitting on the curb, and the other officer stopped him, reported it, and he was fired. Yeah. He's gone. And he was not an officer that was like, that was his track in life. Like, I knew him younger, and that was he was like in kind of like the scouts of police when he was younger and had been received awards and was getting extra training and stuff, but it was like done. He was just out. And I don't know who the officers were that like were there and said something, but I was like, they need to be applauded because
yeah.
The issue, like you're mentioning that this, the second officer comes in, just takes over the one just watching him and is kind of, that's who needs to stand up
yeah.
and say stuff because that's the biggest issue. And I get upset when I see some people, and I saw the meme that was shared around by somebody that said like, what happens when all the good officers leave? They shouldn't be mad at the public. They should be mad at the officers that are doing the job poorly.
The first officer kept just trying to butt in and yeah. go in like,
yeah.
hey man, let's have a conversation. And I'll tell you why I pulled you over.
You should, and then yeah, keep
the
trying.
Other dude just kept going, get out of the way. Like yeah. just pushing yeah. him out.
It goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the hazing, yeah. right?
Yep.
So you don't tease and haze, not like violently, like just jokingly haze new people. For no reason. You do it to enforce the workplace norms because you have no real power over those people. And it's basic group dynamics. And so if you don't have citizens from the outside of the profession going, you aren't a regular citizen as a police officer. You are the vanguard of the state. You are the person that is enforcing the state's interaction with its citizenry. You are of a different class and not a special elite class that gets different privileges, but one that is more susceptible to be policed by citizens because you are protecting rights, and protecting rights is the main duty of the police officer of the government. And, you know, in Dakota's case, you know, and what we were talking about at his workplace where he's become the old man kind of yelling at younger employees, and me being kind of a mid-level guy at my company and working with newer people, you're setting the standards. You're not the boss, but you're saying you can't act this way in this workplace, because if you act this way, the team is not efficient. The team is not successful. You will not get ahead. If you act this way, you're going to put maybe lives in jeopardy if you're in a situation like Dakota, or you're going to put a multi-million dollar brand in jeopardy because there's millions of eyeballs watching us. You don't get to act this way. And if police officers don't start stepping up and saying, we serve and we protect, and we don't just let other people get away because the public is against us, and all this bullcrap victimhood narrative that comes from specifically the conservative side, but on the left, there's a lot of victimhood too. It's like, that's not what any of this is about. It's about you failing your duty as the vanguard of the state to protect this person's rights. The citizen in that video is more important than the police officer, because the police officer has the greater burden of responsibility to make sure that citizen gets out of this okay. And shame on the politicians for passing laws that allow them to pull people over for dumb reasons like having an air freshener in their window. But ultimately, that's on the ultimate vanguard of protecting rights, the citizen. The people of Newcastle are the ones who get to get in their in the politicians' faces and say, we don't want windmills. We don't want the doughboy moved. We made fun of that stuff, but that's exactly what the stuff that's supposed to be happening. But it happens for dumb reasons like the doughboy. It doesn't happen when Dakota's property taxes go up thousands of dollars.
So
people just kind of shrug.
So this is a great segue. It's like you're professional at this, thank Chris. You. House Bill 1381 is the bill that was dealing with home rule and energy, solar and wind farms.
Right.
Betsy Mills, Susan Hume, Bobby Plummer were all on here about a month ago. It had passed the House. It was on a fast track to becoming law. Got into the Senate, got modified And then very interesting comments from Senator Mark Messer about the bill as it got modified. And then eventually it's died and it's dead and it's not going to be coming through in its current form.
Yep. Mark Messer said that the bill did a complete 360. It went from taking authority away from local governments on the positions of renewable energy sources such as windmills and solar farms. And it went the opposite direction and wound up protecting the role of local governments in these positions. So it kind of reinforced home rules.
So the conversation that the three elected officials that were on this show a month ago brought forward was they told us, the state told us, we have to defeat this at our local level. We have the authority at the local level. The state can't do anything about it. You have to do it locally. The House General Assembly, the Republican-led General Assembly, said there's investment that's not coming to these communities. We have a patchwork of laws and rules. We're going to take control at the state level, and we're going to tell you how to do it. And that's when they raised their hand and said, no, local control means local control.
Yeah, remember what you told us? Yeah.
So that's the fight that's been happening. And it's comical to me to see I've tried to explain to people outside of the listening range of this audience the absolute deep fervor of the anti-wind.
It's truly odd.
It has ended the political careers of every elected official. Every county commissioner has been completely removed. Almost the entire county council, one cycle, it was entirely remade.
You saw Trump start to get into that towards the end of his presidency and really milk that before the election.
And it's a thing. There is the state just barely started to nibble at it and got it was like reaching your hand into a tank full of piranhas.
Yeah.
And they just start chunking at you. They got a taste of it. What is the phenomenal political power?
Like what?
It's the third rail of rural politics.
You're going to ask why. You're going to ask why. The best argument that I've ever heard against, because there are all these arguments about like, they say there's health issues related to it. It kills the birds.
Right.
That's all by every major actual peer-reviewed science is a load.
Right.
But the actual best argument I've ever heard came from Betsy Mills. And she said, we don't want them here because they're going to put them in places.
It's opportunity cost.
Where potential development could happen.
Mm.
An expansion in the county. Because of setbacks, you couldn't develop that land.
Right. So you have all this lucrative farmland off of 3 here in Indiana that you put up a bunch of windmills, and then all of a sudden you can't put warehouses.
70 by 69.
Right.
Yeah. Retail housing. You're eliminating as Indianapolis is continuing to grow north and east. We have I-69 and I-70 right here. I-69 misses Henry County by about 5 inches.
Right.
It comes right to here. We have 3 interstate interchanges now, potentially one more on 70 is on the master plan, and we're very close to having one up at I-69. In the Middletown area,
mm-hmm.
which is known for their lamb fries, by the way, if you listen to Patreon.
Yeah, but that is not why Bertha or Betsy in the middle of the country.
A lot of the folks have a not in my backyard attitude.
Right.
They don't want to look at it. There's some jealousy between landowners that are going to make some money and others.
Gotcha. There you go.
There is a balance.
Now we're cooking with gas.
There is a balance between my property and what I can decide versus the conversation of, well, only 10% of the people are going to benefit, so I'm not getting mine. So you've got
always economic jealousy.
And I still have to stare at it
partially. When my grandmother in Plainfield, Indiana, Cracker Barrel moved in and I-70 put up a giant Cracker Barrel sign, she could see it from her yard and was outraged by it.
So now. Yeah. Neighboring counties have it.
There are some legitimate issues with like shadow flicker.
Right.
Like that's a real problem.
There are
if
nuisances.
You've ever driven by like Shenandoah High School has a windmill right now, and the house
like a
two-thirds
scale one that is one single one for the school.
They have to have whenever the sun is rising in the east and the shadow is hitting the houses from the windmill, those people cannot have their windows open because it's just
you get a pulsating shadow flicker.
Yeah, but you nailed it. It's one group of people doesn't want their neighbor to get richer than them.
So
they don't want to create a town of have and have nots, and they're the have nots. They don't want that.
But you have politicians that are saying that we're dying as a community and we have to attract investment. And here's somebody that's going to make a payment or say, here's a $50 million taxable investment in your right. community. Do you want it? Right. It's an incredibly complicated onion. There's also subsidies at every level. The state says you have to have a certain amount of it. The utility providers are desperate to get it. You're potentially going to be giving tax breaks to the people that are going to invest in the community.
Okay, so the state basically said, we don't care what the locals want. We want you to put these in, and the locals bit their hand off.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and Mark Messmer actually said...
Same thing as always happens. It flew through the House before people realized what happened. It switches sides, and the senators' phones blew up.
Right. Mark Messmer said, we gave these people everything they wanted, and they still hated it.
Yeah.
And then he said...
It was like a hostage situation with a
schizophrenic
hostage taker, and then they still killed them. Yeah.
We met all their demands, but they still killed the hostage. Is what he said.
it's politics is a thankless job. This is why you're better off not trying to plan things central planning. Because you can't predict accurately what that population wants or doesn't. The best way to predict it is through the price system. What are people willing to pay for something or not pay for it?
Dan Crenshaw had a really good point last week. And he said, everyone gets upset whenever Washington is gridlocked. But he said, the decisions that we make in Washington, D.C. affect the entire 330 million people that live in this nation. So it's not a bad thing if we can't get things ironed out perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of how this worked. I'm not upset that this bill is dead because it just would add more confusing language onto the books that the planning commissions would have to figure out.
Yeah.
Here's the dirty secret.
Decisions being made at the local level.
They are actively building them. If you take State Road 36 east across the northern part of the county, in Randolph County.
They're not in Henry County, but you can see them from Henry County.
We were on Summit Lake.
Yeah.
And from Summit Lake, there are now 10 windmills that you can clearly see from the lake in Henry County. They're on the doorstep.
But who cares?
Yeah, I don't.
They're in the view, man.
That's the strangest thing is like visually, I don't care. I'll point out, you can go driving some off, back in some county roads and you'll find some uglier old barns or just old farm equipment that's been left out. And then now people are kind of digging in on solar. And the one thing I keep getting mad about, they're like, well, they're getting rid of prime farmland. I'm like, well, that's a farmer's decision. What's prime farmland?
All of this. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
So you do, it's exactly right, Chris. People think they get to decide what somebody else does on their property.
Yeah.
And that's a very real issue for liberty.
And they don't want that. And property demands that you don't get to decide what somebody else does on their property. The other part of this, it comes down to climate change. Baby boomers specifically have grown up on this idea that climate change is completely fake. And a lot of that was completely funded by big oil and energy people who didn't want their business.
A lot of it is the fault that there was really bad science, though, at one point in time that was saying we're going to see another ice age.
Right. And if you study history, the history of Britain is just full of fluctuations. But the reality is that If you admit that climate change is real and you admit that you see what's happening for real in places like Venice, Italy, which isn't going to exist in 25 years, or you look at the ice caps.
All they have to do is build the steel tire, dude. It'll be fine.
Admitting
you can fix anything with more construction money.
But admitting that that is real means you might have to water your grass differently or not at all. It means you might have to change the type of car that you drive. It might mean that you as a person who are 65 years old and have lived a certain way and have gained a certain level of comfort might have to change and admit that maybe your world that you built isn't exactly right and not functioning well. And that is the the permanent anger at millennials towards boomers is that they don't want to change, they don't want to adjust, and they won't retire, so we can't move up and make the same income. Like, go watch City Slickers. I just watched City Slickers. This is the first place I'm debuting this rant. It is the most boomer movie I've ever seen. I love it. It's a great movie. It's super funny.
It's made before when boomers were your age, though, buddy.
But it's Billy Crystal living in a beautiful apartment in a job as a radio salesman that does not exist anymore, let me tell you. And he can afford a two-week vacation out in the woods with his friends. He's got all this money, this great, beautiful lifestyle, and he's bitching about all of it.
It's kind of like he's unhappy. Married with Children.
Yes.
Where Al Bundy is a shoe salesman.
It's worse than that. He's got a job that no longer exists because his economy killed that career, and he's mad about all of it. Ticked me off because you're bitching about a life that millennials can never achieve because of your generation.
We are the same age. Don't you point at me when you have this rant.
Yeah, but you're, please, you're the most boomer I know.
You had a Columbia vest on at dinner.
You really did.
Yeah. That's Bass Pro.
Well, it's like the Bass Pro brand. Well, it's like the people that are trying to, I'm always like, what's Kevin McAllister's dad doing home alone that he can just afford to like,
right.
his family just flies off to vacation every Christmas.
And takes
all of them. Yeah, it takes them all to France.
I don't know why all these kids are doing pyramid schemes. Oh, I don't know, because we two incomes aren't doing it for everybody anymore because you inflated the currency. Not for nothing, but he's like on his eighth camper. So don't tell me you're not a boomer when you're on like your eighth camper over here. How many garages do you have full of boats?
I have one garage for my Navy. It has two boats without board motors and two kayaks.
Us millennials.
And some inflatables.
That is not the Navy. It's the Big Blue River Coast Guard.
Better than your Beezer Creek Coast Guard, I'll tell you that. I can... Within 14 steps from my house, I can get into Elliott Run and go all the way to the Ohio River if I just keep paddling south.
Just ride the tides from the Wyatt State sewers.
Just keep, don't pick anything up that's floating, but you can get all the way to the Ohio River right from Elliott Run.
Fascinating.
All right.
You know who would tell you that you can get to the Ohio River from Elliott Run? A boomer.
Yeah.
Because nobody else would care. The rest of us are working trying to survive.
Are you through?
I feel better now.
Hey Zach.
Yeah.
Ready for final thoughts?
Man, I don't know. I'm trying to just process all of that.
Are you still starstruck by Spangle sitting over there?
No, I'm not starstruck. I just ask him a million questions though, because I'm a huge like Bob and Tom fan.
Well, let's ask away. These are your final thoughts. This is your time.
He's not starstruck. He came up and introduced himself to me once. Yeah. At a Bob and Tom event, and he goes, "Hi, I'm Dakota's neighbor." Yeah,
that's it. Because that's who I was at the time. And then, like, that's not even the most awkward relationship I have with anybody. Grace was handing out water at the mini a couple years ago. And I said, "Hey, Grace," but because I was running, it sounded like the principal from Ferris Bueller's Day Off when it was like Grace, and I was like, that's a horrific moment in my life that I'll never forget.
You met her later.
I met her later and said, oh yeah, and I think I was chatting on when she was on the show, and I was like, oh yeah, that's me. And she acted like she remembered me. I don't know if she did or not. I doubt many people shouted her name that were running by that day.
I can answer the questions because I already know what you're going to ask. But yes, Tom is that weird off air. Yes, Chick really does flash her park. Yes, Christy Lee is the nicest person, and B, Josh Arnold does not eat as much as you think.
I know a bunch of that because I listen to enough of this stuff.
But, you know, what happened to Bob?
Shut up.
Okay, you know what? The poor Spangle has to help run a group on Facebook, and there are a lot of boomers in it because that was the fan base at one point. And there are still people, at least once or twice a year, somebody comes in that group and says, "What happened to Bob?" And you're like, you're not a fan.
Here's why it bothers me is that there were people who did it after he left to be a jerk.
Yeah.
To the thousandth
Which
degree.
Which is incredibly disrespectful to everybody that's there that's making a fantastic program.
Poor Vibbert and I have PTSD from those years, like running the social media, because people say to avatars in entertainment things that they would never say to a person if they're sitting across from them. And usually the person reading that is not the person that, like, I don't know. I'm not going to complain about my job because I'm not in any danger, right? Like, I don't have a hard job. I have a great, great career. But I just say this, like, people who are in the public eye do not need your bad day taken out on them. And I'm not just talking about me, but like, I just see the way that like people talk to some others and it's just like, what? But yeah, that's my rant. Like that's my final thought is be nice to famous people.
What role are you going to have on the Ms. Pat show? Are you on BET? Are you going to be like the white kid neighbor?
No, I am.
You're not in?
No, I'm not. Dion and I are not in the Ms. Pat show. We're hoping for a cameo in episode or in season two. I'm sure there will be a season two because from what I've seen, the show is going to be amazing. If you don't know, I'm a co-host on the Pat Down with Ms. Pat. It's the funniest podcast on the planet. Like, way funnier than this. So go check that out.
It just hurts.
Yeah.
It just hurts deep down. All right. If people want to follow more of the Weird Libertarians, of course, you guys know this voice because if you're listening to the podcast, Chris is literally the first thing you hear when you push play.
So oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. It's the very first thing that people hear.
And you press that 15 seconds button.
Yeah, yeah, then you skip forward. Go to chris-spangle.com. You can find all my different projects from the Pat Down, my work, and the Chris Spangle Show. And make sure you go to historyofmodernpolitics.com and sign up for the email. That's the new one. That is for the wall patrons. 6 to 9 months in advance, you're going to get a twice-a-month history show. We're basically what Matt Whitliff and I have been talking about for 5 years, 6 years. Is you can't truly understand modern politics if you don't understand history. And we initially wanted to define libertarianism, conservatism, and progressivism. And the more we kept like working backwards, like, all right, 1994 isn't far enough. So like we're starting at AD 94 and like working our way forward and eventually ending with like, okay, so where did gun rights and all those arguments start? You know, but we're starting basically with like development.
You don't want to zoom through it too fast. You're going to be like, oh shit, we're at current day, and there was all this. Like the show's over.
We literally have four. Our outline is 53 pages already. We've been working on this for a year. It's going to start next month.
This is how you chose to spend your pandemic.
No, literally. I mean, yeah. I mean, my goal this year is to read 2 books a month. I think I probably listen to 30 minutes of podcasts a week because I'm reading so much right now. And it's been that way for a year. I mean, I'm reading 4 books on antiquity right now. I just finished 3 books on medieval history. I've read Bede from 700 AD. Like we've put a ton of work into this.
Are you still holding paper books? Are you Kindle reading now?
No, I do both.
Library? Or you're buying? Or have you
reacquired
a book collection again?
Oh yeah,
you had it pared down to nothing for.
I had it pared down to nothing and I regret that. I now have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 bookshelves, 6 feet tall, and they're double stacked. So I probably have 4,000 books in my apartment.
One past episode of your show that was an oddball episode. It was a different one. Was when you interviewed the guy in Dallas.
Oh yeah.
That is, people should listen to that because one, it's fascinating because the JFK assassination is a fascinating thing to go into.
Yeah, that was.
But then when you pay attention to where he's talking about the people and that guy's memory was like Donald Davidson-esque. If you're a 500 fan, and then you're like, you get done with it and you're like, well, that was really interesting. I learned a whole bunch of stuff and your view of the government as you know it changes because you realize it's like the same 12 people.
Yeah.
He's talking about the same people then that are involved now. And it's because it's kind of weaved in and you're like, no, they're not. What? That was a great listen. And the JFK is an interesting thing, but yeah, that's an interesting listen just to listen to one, all of his theories and what he knew about it. And then how he can weave all the people into the story as well.
I could have talked to Robin for 4 more hours.
Was some relation with that guy to the CIA. Lee Harvey, we should not get into this.
Chris, so go, it's 2 years. Never, 2 years ago, it was like October, November. It was when I interviewed him about the Kennedy assassination.
He tried to stop me. He's like, am I talking too much? You're like, no, just keep going.
No, man. He was this Texas Southern, like he could tell a story. Like we literally booked a 30-minute tour and spent 8 hours with the guy because he was so fascinating.
You ruined the rest of his day.
No, he does this all the time.
You could tell he was having the best time just telling the story, just figuring out how in-depth he could go.
I had to get to the airport. I was almost late, and I had to pee that entire interview, and I just had to pee. Yep. That's all I could think about. I know what it is.
The dude that assassinated Lee Harvey Oswald.
J.
Jack Ruby.
Right.
Jack Ruby.
Allegedly.
Was then sent. He was.
Sorry, I've been listening too much to Hinton Rossi.
He was given a psychological evaluation by the doctor that was in charge of Project MK Ultra.
Yeah.
And whenever he came out, he is whenever he started speaking the gibberish about imprisoning the Jews and all that stuff.
Yeah. So the Kennedy, there's a great book called A Cruel and Shocking Act about the Warren Commission. And it's not a conspiracy book. It's by a really great journalist. But, you know, you read that book and then you read about like Cy Hirsch's book, Reporter, his autobiography. He's the guy who came out with the My Lai Massacre and a bunch of stuff about Bush. Like you read books about that period, like the one you mentioned earlier. There's this one guy that worked for the CIA. I think it was James something. He was like the number three in command at the CIA at the time. And like this guy pops up in Watergate. He pops up in the Kennedy assassination. He pops up in My Lai Massacre. He pops up like he's like this one dude who kind of like the government is way smaller than you think. Like people think it must be super hard to get into some of the upper echelons of some of these places. But it's like being in politics here. Just show up. Be consistent. If you want to be a
He's always there.
If you want to be a top libertarian podcast like the Chris Spangle Show, you don't have to be good. You just have to keep doing it.
You just have to outlast when everybody else goes to jail.
It's exactly right. So, I mean, and it's just, but yeah, Cruel and Shocking Act. If you want to start anywhere, because it's not like, it's like a good place to start with the official story, but it's not like trying to tell you what to think. But that Robin interview is great. It's such a fascinating tale. Like there's so many different things. Like, I was convinced after talking with him that LBJ did it, the CIA did it. Then he recommended a documentary. I went and watched that. I'm like, no way, man. Castro did it. And the Cuban, like, there's just so many plausible
So many theories.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, but then you listen to Cruel and Shocking Act, and you're like, maybe the double bullet theory could have happened. But, like, even Arlen Specter was kind of like.
Final thoughts from D Squared over here?
I have nothing. I'm good now. We've
covered what you worried about. I have a complaint. COVID pandemic is like 13 months old.
Had enough.
We were at Pizza King.
Right.
And the damn Touch Tunes
machine. On State Road 3.
On State Road 3 is turned off because of the COVID pandemic. The app-based DJ machine, karaoke.
No. It's an old Touch Tunes. You can't access it on your phone.
No, this.
They need to give you
a rubber
gloves.
It still has a coin slot.
No, don't get in the way of a joke.
This is dumb.
This is
Who has
stupid.
Coins?
There are things that when you go places that are unnecessarily shut down still that don't need to be.
They're an excuse.
Yes.
We don't take this. You go into some place and it says, we won't take cash because of COVID.
Right.
We won't not take cash because of COVID.
We had to fire you because of COVID.
It's whatever we don't want to do, COVID is going to be our excuse.
Yes.
We have gotten to this point. I'm not making this
up. No, and if you don't start saying, why isn't the Touch Tunes open? It's going to stay shut down forever. This is where the lockdown people were right.
It's just as easy for the employees to say we don't do that anymore.
It's probably just broke and they don't want to pay to have it fixed.
We'll just blame
it on COVID.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't pay. My card's broken. I don't want you touching it. I got COVID. Let's see how that lasts.
All right. We can't let this show go on without reminiscing for just a moment. 3 years ago, three of the four people at this table brought a city together to give a bird a funeral.
That's right.
3 years ago this week, Dakota. The Newcastle turkey.
Rest in peace.
It's over. There was a monument. The Facebook memory came yesterday of the
This is also the third anniversary of my odometer hitting 80085 on I-69. So I hit boobs.
What's
on
I-6
boobs.
Flip it over. Did you not have a calculator in
Bob Cohen was proud.
Yeah.
I hope you sent that to some people at the time. All right. That's all. Next week, we have a very special guest booked. I have not reconfirmed, but I believe we have Joan Orivitz on next week, formerly of ESPN, author of the Split book. It's getting ready to come out. And I think also a book on the history of PacWest racing, which is fascinating as well. We will.
to who?
It's the biggest deal is definitely going to be the Split book. It is politics. It's everything. But he also has another book that I feel like we probably ought to promote. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Boss Hog of Liberty, which is part of the We Are Libertarians Network. I am Chris Spangle, and I am the founder of this network. And I invite you to listen to all of our shows, which you can find at WeAreLibertarians.com or by searching for these in your podcatcher. The flagship show is the We Are Libertarians podcast, where we apply libertarian principles to current events. The Brian Nichols Show is a conversation amongst Republicans, Democrats, libertarians, independents, as they talk about what is happening in the news. And we have many other podcasts like The Chris Spangle Show, Upward, The Cost, Raw Audio Politics, Miranda's World, and Tad Talk, which is quite a ride. So check all of these out. Go to WeAreLibertarians.com and you can check out all of our great podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.